Hi, good afternoon. So I hope you've all collected the handout from the back of the lecture. There's another handout for today. So today's lecture is the last lecture in this structured data part of the course on relational databases. And today's lecture is going to cover the SQL query language, which, as probably most of you know, is the query language that's most used for querying databases in real-world applications, and especially for those databases that conform to the relational model, so for relational databases. Now, to cover SQL properly, SQL's a real practical language, would require a whole lecture course in itself. So, of course, we're not going to do that. We're going to just have one lecture on SQL. But the point of the course is not to teach you how to use SQL as a practical query language, but rather the point of this course on relational databases was to introduce the principles behind relational databases. And what you've seen so far in terms of querying are two theoretical query languages. There was firstly relational algebra, which had this procedural interpretation, that is, every expression gave us an implicit algorithm for constructing a table that's the result of the query. And then in the last lecture, we looked at tuple relational calculus, which was this declarative approach to querying. And remember that declarative meant when we write a query, we don't say how we want to get the data, we say what data we want, but not how to get it. So we've already seen the two principled approaches to querying data embodied in these two theoretical languages. And the point of introducing SQL here is not to teach you, which is impossible within the scope of this course, as I've said, to teach you to use SQL as a practical language, but at least it'll give the what's in this course will give you the basis for that. But the point is rather to illustrate today how the ingredients from relational algebra and tuple relational calculus from the theoretical approaches we've seen come together in this real practical query language, whose development was later than the... So Codd, in his original paper on relational databases, proposed relational algebra and tuple relational calculus. The development of SQL followed that, and it was the development of SQL which was instrumental in getting Codd's ideas on relational databases, but turning those theoretical ideas into something of real practical importance, which is what relational databases are now. So, very brief history of SQL. Well, firstly, it stands for structured query language. That's both the language is structured, but it's a query language for querying structured data. So structured query language in two senses. And you see it was originally developed in the mid-1970s. So Codd's paper was the early 1970s. It started 3 or 4 years later, the development of SQL. Codd was not part of that project, even though he worked for IBM. But it was people using his ideas and developing them in this practical way. And it caught on very rapidly, and since then the development has been very widespread. And so, because lots of diverse versions of SQL were implemented by diverse implementers, they decided it was important to have a query, a standard. So the SQL standard was ratified by ISO in 1987. There have been several revisions. The most recent one was just 4 years ago. So there's a standard to which all implementations of SQL are supposed to conform, but in fact they don't, because for two reasons. Well, firstly, the standard is a little bit ambiguous, so different implementations take different takes, have different interpretations on the ambiguities in the standard. And the second reason is that historically, different vendors of SQL have diverged from the standard, but they want to, when they develop their new system, their updated systems, they want to always maintain backwards reverse compatibility with their earlier systems. So there's some built-in differences from the standards for that reason. But nonetheless, SQL is a standardized language. Actually, everything we're going to cover today is in the most basic part of SQL, which hasn't really changed right since the start. And the last thing to say is just this bottom line on the slide. So it's pronounced SQL. Well, that might seem obvious, but in fact, SQL was originally developed in a project called the SQL Project. So that's up here. Sorry, can I have quiet, please? Thank you. So the SQL Project was the early development of SQL, and quite a lot of people, especially those who've been working in databases for a long time, call SQL SQL still. But I've put this on the slide because actually one of the first things it says in the standard for SQL is that SQL should be pronounced SQL. So that's actually standardized in the ISO standard. Anyway, we will call it SQL, and the way this lecture is going to work, I'm going to refer to as far as possible connections with relational algebra and with tuple relational calculus to demonstrate, as I said, this influence of these two theoretical languages on the development of this practical language. But basically, the lecture is going to proceed via examples illustrating some of the basic features of SQL and how they implement some of the features we've already seen in relational algebra and tuple relational calculus. Now, there's a separation in SQL between the data definition language, in which you define schemas, and the data manipulation language, which is the language for manipulating data. We've already seen the data definition language in one of the earlier lectures in this course. So today we're going to look at data manipulation language, and we're going to look at how to firstly insert and delete data from database. So that's how to maintain a database if we want to add new entries or take entries out. But then more importantly, how to query the database. So inserting, deleting, and editing data is very straightforward, and I'm not going to spend very long on this because the main point is going to be the querying. So let's again look at our running example of students, and remember from lecture note 2, or well, anyway, one of the earlier lectures, our schema for students has the primary key matriculation number, the name of the student, the age, and the email. And if we want to add something to the table, so basically our database will consist of a set of tuples, that's rows with the data in for a student. Suppose we want to add a new student, well, all we do is we say insert into the student's table, and we give, and then we say values, and we give the tuple, which is the new row that corresponds to the student we're adding. So here we're giving the matriculation number as a string because it's an 8-character string, that's what we've declared up there, the name, the email there, and so notice how the strings are they're enclosed in these single quotation marks, and the age is just an integer, so we don't need to put the quotation marks around that. And here when we say insert into students, the laser pointer seems to be running out the battery, so let's try anyway. So when we say insert into students, notice how here I've given the field names after the student's table. You don't need to do that, but it's considered good style because if you then maintain this in a file, it means that you can see from the insert command what the schema of the student's table is without actually referring back to the schema, which might be stored somewhere else or not easily accessible to you. So it's considered a good practice to write that explicitly. So just by looking at the insert command yourself, you can see what the query is. Deleting data is rather similar. So here we say delete from the student's table those tuples S. So here S ranges over tuples over rows of the student's table. So those rows S, where the name in the row is Bob, so that'll delete every row from the student's table where the name of the student is Bob. And here's an example of updating. So suppose we want to rename this student with this matriculation number to Bobby. Well, we say update the student's S, set the student's name to Bobby, so that we get the right one, where the matriculation number field of S is this. Okay, so that's just an example. Those are three simple examples of how we add, delete, and edit entries in the database. But as I said, the main point of the lecture is going to be looking at how we query a database. So basically the whole of the rest of the lecture is going to be explaining through examples this basic format here, which is the basic format of an SQL query. So the basic format is that we say select something from some tables where some condition holds. So the select, actually what we say, we select some fields that we're going to specify from the tables we give in the from list where subject to the rows that we're looking at satisfying these, what I've put called qualifications there. And this square brackets here around distinct means this is an optional word we can include if we want to. And we'll see the meaning of that later. So the select here, we tell it some columns that we want to return. So it's a slightly odd terminology because in relational algebra, selection was selecting rows out of a table. The select here actually performs a projection. It selects some columns out of a table. Never mind, this is the terminology that we have in SQL. The from clause specifies a list of tables that we want to look in, and effectively, as we'll see, it amounts, the way it's computed is to compute a cross product of the tables, and the where clause actually performs what would be called a selection in what is called a selection in relational algebra, so that selects the rows out of the table. It all looks a bit abstract when you just see the general form, so let's go straight away to a very simple example that we'll consider a few variations of, and then we'll go into some more complicated examples to illustrate a bit more of the complex logic you can do with SQL. So here, this is just a familiar query that we've seen before. We want to find all those students that are at least 19 years old. So we need to select from the students table those fields where the age of the student is strictly greater than 18, or we could have said greater than or equal to 19 here. So the format we're using for this is the star here means return all the columns in the tables we're looking at. Okay, so we'll return all the columns of the students table. So the result of this, because we're just looking at the students table here, so the resulting schema of this query is going to be the same as the schema of the students table itself. So we select all the columns from those tuples S in the students table where the age of S is greater than 18. Okay, where the age column is greater than 18. Now the role of S here, this is like a tuple variable in tuple relational calculus. So the S here is a variable ranging over the rows, that is the tuples in the students table, and here in the where clause we're looking at the age field in the tuple, so the particular column in the S tuple, or the particular field in the S tuple that is the age. In fact, in SQL, you can, for a simple query like this, you can miss out the S altogether, because if you only put one table in, then it knows that and you just refer to the age field here, it will just automatically say, well, if I'm just looking at one table, I just need to look at the rows in that table, and I'll look at the age field in that table. But for the sake of this course, I'm always going to put these tuple variables into the queries. The more explicit way of doing this, rather than using the star here, would be to say select and to explicitly specify the four fields that we have in the students table. So as I said, this returns all the fields in the students table, but we could also write them out explicitly, the matriculation number, the name, the age, and the email. As it says at the bottom, the first approach is useful for interactive querying, if we just want to quickly write a query because we've got less that we need to write. But if we want to maintain the query, so if we're self-keeping some queries in a library of queries so that we might want to reuse them, it's much better to use the second style, because the second style is explicit, and it means once again, it's making the schema of the result explicit in the query. So to understand the query, we don't need to remember what the schema of the student's table is, because we see what the schema of the result of the query is directly from the query itself. Well, here's another variation on the same query. So now we're again selecting the students that are whose age is at least 19 years, but this time we're just returning the name and the ages field. So this is now a different query from the one that appeared in two versions on the previous slide, because the schema of this query now just has two columns. It has just the name field and the age field. And here's another variation on it where we're showing the use of the distinct word that I said is optional. So it's been optional, it's not been used in the previous queries. Here we're including it. And the difference is that if we add distinct, then, so here we get for every student, so in the first query we get for every student whose age is at least 19 years, we get an entry for them consisting of their name and their age. Here, when we put distinct in, we get for, once again, for every student whose age is at least 19 years, we get an entry consisting of their name and their age. Only if there are two students that have the same name and the same age, where in the first query we would get two different rows in the table, for one for each student, the second query it says, I only want, so the distinct says, I only want the resulting table to contain rows that are distinct, that is different. So the second query, if there are many students with the same name and same age, it will just return one row with that name and age in it. This example is not a very useful use of the distinct, but there are useful uses which we might see an example later. So there are places that this distinct keyword is really essential. Right, so this explains the query syntax in detail. This is the kind of slide that is there for completeness in the lecture notes. I'm not going to go through it in the lecture. In the lecture, I'm just going to concentrate on the examples. I just want to mention the terminology here. So these tuple variables in tuple relational calculus are called range variables here in SQL. So actually, I was talking about tuple variables. Really, I should have called them range variables. Doesn't really matter. The thing, what we have to understand is that these variables correspond to rows, so they range over rows of the table. Right, so before going to the other examples, I'm going to explain an important concept which is the main way of understanding an SQL query. Now, we've seen, as I said, these two theoretical query languages, relational algebra and tuple relational calculus, where relational algebra was a procedural language. There was a way of interpreting each operator as an operation that we perform on the data to construct tables, so an algorithm for producing the output query. And tuple relational calculus was a declarative query language. That is, we specified what we want to get rather than how to get it. Now, SQL is also considered a declarative language, in that when we write a query, we're saying what we want to get rather than how to get it. However, we are now going to give a procedural interpretation to a query. So when we have an SQL query, we can understand the query as specifying a method for constructing the result of the query. And I'm going to explain that now, but then later on I'll say why nonetheless, in spite of this interpretation, SQL is nonetheless considered a declarative language. So this is called what's called the conceptual evaluation strategy. So this is the way to go from a query to understand how to produce the output table that you want as the result of the query. But it's called conceptual evaluation because the role it's playing is it is explaining to us how to understand what the query is saying, but it is not how you would really compute the answer in practice, because it might be very inefficient. So it's conceptual, it helps our understanding of the query, rather than practical, it's not how we would really compute the answer. So what it does is it works in four steps. So first we look at the from list and we compute the cross product of the tables in the from list. Then we look at the qualification condition, that's the thing that after the where, and we delete the rows in the cross product that fail this condition, or in other words we retain the rows that pass the condition, might be a better way of thinking about it. Penultimately, we look at the select list and we delete those columns that we don't want, or we retain just those columns we do want, think about it in either way. And finally, if distinct is specified, we eliminate duplicate rows from the table. So we never have two different rows that look the two rows in the table that look the same. So I'll explain that through an example explaining the query. But firstly, just to explain this distinct, because this is one of the things that we've got now in SQL. We're removing duplicate rows from tables. We didn't see any analog of that in relational algebra and tuple relational calculus. And in fact, we couldn't see it in relational algebra or tuple relational calculus, because in relational algebra and tuple relational calculus, tables were relations, in a sense that SQL tables aren't. So I'll just put the lights on. Right, so in the relational model, used by relational algebra and tuple relational calculus, a table, equivalently a relation, is a set of tuples. So this means there's no concept of the same row appearing twice in a table, because a set is just a collection of different things. So when you have a set of tuples, it doesn't make sense to say that one particular tuple appears three times or four times in a set. Sets don't have any notion of multiplicity in them. There's no notion of how many times something appears in the set. But instead, the relational model used by SQL, a table is what's called a multiset of tuples. And this slide explains the difference between a multiset and a set. So maybe I'll just put the lights down a little bit. So a multiset is just like a set, it's a collection of elements, but when we're looking at a set, two sets are the same if they have the same individual elements, but we don't count the number of times they occur. Whereas two multisets are the same if they have the same individual elements and they occur the same number of times. So these, for example, however we write them, this is just the set 2, 3, 5 with, this is the same set in all four different cases. But these are different multisets because the individual entries occur a different number of times in each one. However, in multisets like in sets, one similarity is that the order in which we write the elements doesn't count. So we're just interested in the different elements and the number of times they occur, but not the order they appear in. So because in SQL a table is a multiset of tuples, that means the number of times an individual row occurs in a table is important, but the order in which the rows appear in the table is not considered important. So, number of times a row appears in table in an SQL table is important. The order in which the rows appear rows are listed is not important. So the point here is the distinct, there's no analog of distinct in relational algebra or tuple relational calculus because it wouldn't even make sense there to have it, because there's no notion of the number of times that an entry occurs. But in SQL, because a table is a multiset, the number of times a row appears is important. So now it does make a difference if we ask for a row to occur several times or to occur once. So that's why the distinct is important in SQL. Right, so we'll now go to our example. And the example is going to explain explain this conceptual evaluation strategy, how we understand an SQL command in terms of the conceptual evaluation using these example tables here. So we've got four students, two courses, and two, and in fact, just to keep things nice and small, so obviously this isn't a very comprehensive database of students, so in fact only two of these students are taking any courses at all, and those two students are each only taking one course. Anyway, things are still get sufficiently, it's a sufficient amount of data to illustrate the points I want to make. Right, so this is the first example query, and this one we're going to go through using this conceptual evaluation strategy to understand what the query is saying. So remember, the conceptual evaluation strategy worked in four stages, the first stage of which was to compute a cross product of all the rows appearing in the from clause. So we're selecting here a student's name from students S, so S ranges over rows of the students table, T ranges over rows in the takes table, C ranges over rows in the courses table, and then we ask for these equalities to hold. So the course name should be Informatics 1, the code of the course tuple should be the same as the code of the course the code of the takes tuple should be the same as the code of the course tuple, and the student matriculation number in the student tape from the student row should be the same as that in the takes row. So the first step computes the cross product of the three tables. So the cross product of the student takes and courses table. So remember, this puts the three schemas side by side and puts the rows in every single possible combination of rows you can get from the three tables. And you'll remember that the cardinality of the tables gets multiplied when you do a cross product. So when we look at the three tables we're cross producting, we've got a cardinality of four rows times two rows times two rows, and so the cardinality of the cross product is 4 times 2 times 2, which is 16. So even for this very, very small database, we see we get 16 rows in the table computed by the cross product. You can imagine if you've got a real life-size large database, a real practical database, that computing the cross product when you've got a query like this that involves several tables together is going to result in really enormous tables, and it is something you wouldn't want to do in practice. This is why this is a conceptual evaluation strategy. It's just for our understanding. It isn't the way that an SQL implementation would go about evaluating the query. Nevertheless, we're going to compute that cross product. So the schema of the resulting from the cross product, well, it's just the three schemas side by side. So we have four fields from the student table, three from the takes table, and three from the courses table. So that's 10 columns in total. And then we have the 16 rows, as I said. Anyway, we're quickly going to get to a smaller table because step two now selects only those rows from this that satisfy everything in the wear condition, everything we specified to hold in the wear condition. So here we want to say the matriculation number is in the student's table agrees with that in the takes table, the code in the takes table agrees with that in the courses table, and the course name is Informatics 1. So when we have a look at our three tables here, well, we're going to have, so we've got 16 rows in the cross product. Now I'm going to do this without actually writing out the large tables that we've got. So you can either work this out for yourself offline or you can try to follow me, but I'm just going to go through it quite quickly. So hopefully you'll anyway just get something out of just hearing the explanation, even if you don't follow as you go along. So we've got the informatics one is the course name. We're looking for the code of Informatics 1. So we're looking for those rows where Informatics 1 is the course name. That reduces the number of rows in the cross product to 8, because the other 8 have Mathematics 1 in for the course name. We ask for the course code to match the takes code. So that reduces the number of rows in the cross product to 4, because there's only one row here with Inf 1 in the takes code. We then ask for the matriculation number of the student in this row here to match the matriculation number in the student's table. So that's just this one here, that's Mary. So in the end, to get all those conditions satisfied, the matriculation number in the student's table agrees with that in the takes table, the course code in the takes table agrees with that in the courses table, and the name in the courses table is Informatics 1, we end up with only one of the 16 rows. So, the example table, well, we haven't changed the schema, we're just selecting out rows from this cross product, but we only have one row left satisfying these three constraints, these three equalities. Step three now says return only those columns that appear in the select clause. And when we do that, well, we already saw the only student was Mary, and the select clause just has the name column, so we end up with just the table that has one row and one column, which is called name, and the only entry is Mary. And step four of the conceptual evaluation would apply only had we put distinct here, which we haven't, so it doesn't apply. If we'd put distinct here, it would remove any duplicate rows. There's only one row in the table anyway, so there aren't any duplicate rows to remove. So in this query, it wouldn't do anything. Okay, so that's one example explained in quite a lot of laborious detail, but illustrating this conceptual evaluation strategy. I now want to come back to a point that I made earlier. I said we're giving SQL this conceptual evaluation strategy, which is procedural. That's a way of actually interpreting an SQL command as a method of constructing the result table. Nonetheless, we understand SQL as a declarative language. And the reason is because how we understand SQL, we're saying we want the computer to return us the result of this procedure, but we don't care how the computer does that. It shouldn't follow this conceptual evaluation strategy, because we've already seen that's inefficient. It constructs this huge cross product. So we don't want it to do that. We want it to find the most efficient way possible of producing the same result. So SQL is declarative in the sense that the query itself is specifying what we want, namely the result of what we want is the result of the conceptual evaluation, but we're not telling SQL how to get it. And the way SQL goes about getting it, there's quite a deep science involved to getting this to work efficiently, and actually this science uses relational algebra in a very essential way and what's called query optimization based on relational algebra. Anyway, for this course, we're just going to take that for granted. But the important point is we've got a declarative language, and it has an efficient implementation, and the basis for that efficient implementation is this theoretical query language that we introduced a couple of lectures ago. Right, so for the rest of the lecture, we're just going to look at a few more example queries to illustrate a few more features of SQL corresponding to features that we've seen in, well, in most cases, in relational algebra and tuple relational calculus. And the features that we cover that are covered in these examples are those features of SQL that I'm going to assume you understand, say, for example, in the exam, in the exam for this course. So you don't need to understand for this course any SQL that's not covered in these examples and that's not on the slides. Right, so the next one is saying find the names of all courses taken by Mary. So it's similar to what we had before. We need to we want to find the name of a course, so we select the course name. In order to get the courses taken by Mary, we need the students table to get Mary, we need the courses table to get the courses, and we need the takes table to relate the students to the courses that they're taking. And we just need to connect everything up, so the matriculation number should coincide, the codes of the courses should coincide, and the name should be Mary. So it's very similar to what we had before. So that's an easy example. Suppose you want to add a bit of logic to it. So we don't just want to find the students that are taking Informatics 1. We want to find the students that are taking either Informatics 1 or Mathematics 1. Well, we can do this just by using, instead of AND, we can just use a logical OR. So we just change in the first query that we had, we change the test that the course name is Informatics 1 to that the course name is Informatics 1 or it's Mathematics 1. So those that are straightforward, I'm going to go through rather rapidly. Here's a slightly more subtle one, and this is the same query again. We want to find the students taking Informatics 1 or Mathematics 1, but we're now writing this in a different way. This is now the same as the first query we had, finding the students' names of those students taking Informatics 1. And here we write the same query again, but we change it to get those students taking Mathematics 1. And you'll remember in relational algebra, there was this operation of union that allowed us to combine the two queries into a single query, saying we want the solutions to the first query and together with the solutions to the second query, all gathered together. So SQL has such a thing, and it's called union. So here we're using a union operation as the union operation from relational algebra. So there's a very good question to ask at this point, which is, how does the union in SQL, what operation is it implementing on multisets? Because there are different choices of union operation that you can implement on multisets. I'm not going to answer that question. If you're interested, you can look at the DMS, the Database Management Systems book, but I just want to flag that as an issue. I'm not going to presume that you know the answer to that question for anything to do with this course, but I just want to point out that issue is there. So now that we've got this idea of unioning things, here's a similar one, but now we're looking at the names of all students who are taking, instead of taking either Informatics 1 or Mathematics 1, they're taking both Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1. And one way of doing this is to say, well, we want students that take both Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1. So we need a tuple for C1, which is going to correspond to Informatics 1. Another tuple from the courses table corresponding to Mathematics 1. A tuple S from the students table. And we're going to relate all these together. So we need two different takes tuples. And then we can just put this whole chain in here, and we say, well, you can work it out, and I'm not going to go through the logic of it now, but I just want to point out that we have this complicated way of writing this query. But as it says, this is somewhat counterintuitive. You need to use rather a lot of tables. It's worth spending a bit of time to understand this example in your spare time. But it's counterintuitive. But also, it could be quite inefficient. So because we've got so many different tables appearing, well, so many different range variables appearing in the from clause here, if SQL implemented this in the naive way, it would involve a very large cross product in order to do the implementation. Of course, SQL doesn't implement in the naive way. It does this query optimization that I mentioned before. But still, you might try to write your queries in a way that will help SQL to do its query optimization. And in general, if you put large numbers of tables in the from line of a query, that's not a good way of helping SQL to do its optimization. But we can write something similar in a different way. So we had the union clause. Yes, sorry?
Is there a command to make SQL run queries in a
naive
way?
In a what, sorry?
In a naive way.
I don't know, actually. It wouldn't be a very useful thing to do, but there might be. So probably it depends on your implementation. But nobody would want to implement the evaluation of queries in the naive way, because it quickly gets very, very, very inefficient. So, but anyway, it's a good question, but I don't know the answer. Okay, so here's a slight variation on the previous query, where we're now finding the names and matriculation numbers of the students taking Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1 using, instead of the more complicated logic on the previous slide, we're now using two simpler clauses, again finding students together with matriculation numbers taking Informatics 1, students together with their matriculation numbers taking Mathematics 1, and then just like we unioned to get those taking both courses, either of the courses, we can intersect to get those students taking both clauses. Right, but now I'm going to ask a tricky question, which I don't know if anyone will be able to answer it off the top of their head. I'm using this example to find students together with their matriculation numbers taking both Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1. The previous query with the more complicated solution was just asking for the student names taking Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1. If we modified this query to just have student names in rather than matriculation numbers and tried to use that as an answer to the previous query, so that the names of those students taking both Informatics 1 and Mathematics 1, can somebody see straight off, this is a very tricky question, why this wouldn't work? Does anyone want to have a go at that? It's, yes?
Name doesn't have to be unique. Intersection doesn't basically resolve.
Right. Right, very good. So the issue is because names aren't unique, matriculation numbers are the primary key here, so they're unique. So the problem is, if we tried to do this just using the student names, you might have two different students with the same name, one of whom takes Informatics 1 but not Mathematics 1, and the other one that takes Mathematics 1 but not Informatics 1. So in that case, because the two students have the same name, that name would be returned if we just had if we forgot the matriculation numbers here. If we omitted the matriculation numbers, that name would be returned, the same name would be returned by both queries and would therefore appear in the intersection. So we would get that name appearing in the intersection even though neither of those two students actually take both courses. Okay? So it's a very, very subtle point, but you can think about that again offline. What's important really is to understand the examples on the slides here rather than these variations. But the really important point from this to mention is that this kind of question illustrates that there is quite a lot of subtlety in formulating these queries to get the answers that you want to get to a query. Okay, well, here's another similar example, and the point of this is just, here we're looking for the students taking Informatics 1 but not mathematics one. And the point of this is to introduce the except operation, which is the same, which is the analog of the difference operation in relational algebra. That's the minus operation we had in relational algebra. And I think I'll just let you go through that one offline, because what I want to go to for the end of the lecture is something which is the last feature we're going to look at in SQL, but this is a feature in which SQL properly extends relational algebra and tuple relational calculus. Relational algebra and tuple relational calculus are formalisms that just allow you to construct tables as results. So the result of every query is a table. In SQL, you're allowed to do things, you're allowed to make queries whose result is not simply a table, but it might be some important information such as quantitative, that's numerical information about the data that's stored. And here are some what are called aggregate operations that allow you to do that. So you can count the number of items in the resulting table, you can sum a set of values appearing in a table, you can average a set of values appearing in a table, you can find the maximum of a set of values appearing in a table, and you can find the minimum of a set of values appearing in a table. So, for example, we can count the number of students taking Informatics 1 by just making the query that returns the matriculation numbers of all students taking Informatics 1. So that's what the query would be without this count there. And we just put the count around it, and that says count the number of rows in the resulting table. And that the result of that will just be the number of matriculation the number of students taking Informatics 1. Or we could find the average mark in Informatics 1 by, again, constructing the table with the average mark, whose columns are the marks, and just averaging the rows of the table. And just to point out, and you might note this down, this query here, for this query to work, it's fundamentally important that SQL uses this multiset model, this idea of a table being a multiset of tuples, because the average mark, in order to compute the average mark, there might be several marks that are the same, and the average mark, the correct average, will depend on the number of times these same marks appear. So if we had, if we didn't have the model in which distinct rows the same row can appear several times and the number of times it appears is important, then this query for computing the average would not work. Okay, well, as I said at the start, it's really impossible in one lecture, and as you see, I've been rushing, but I think the important thing is to get the things that I've said, and then you can go offline to look at some of the examples in more detail. But it's really impossible to cover SQL properly in one lecture, but I hope I've succeeded in doing what the main point for this course, which is relating SQL to tuple relational calculus and relational algebra, and to say how those ingredients are important in, well, actually the were important in the technology and how it works for SQL. Okay, so that's the end of structured data, and we start the second part of the course on Tuesday. The point is to use the to
to actually show that there's an operation that corresponds exactly to the relational algebra. So it's combining, so maybe I should have said this, it's the modularity of two theories and combining them. So you can, I mean, of course, you can put it in a where clause and say instead that it's not in the result. But then you need to, so you want to put that in the where clause.
As you say, whenever I use SQL, whenever I need to exclude certain values, I don't always use that in.
Right. But then you need a nested query. Right. So you say not in, and then you have the query that gives you the result, the table that you want it not to be.
Is it just less efficient then?
Sorry? No, it's not less efficient. But if you have a look at, just have a look at this slide here. I wanted to show how these relational algebra operators are directly there in SQL. So we had the minus, the intersect, and the union as three examples.
Oh, I was just wondering why it's in SQL rather than why you chose that example to show off.
Oh, you're wondering why it's in. Well, I think you can always, just by its definition, you can automatically reformulate it using a not in. I mean, you can see anything with an except could be reformulated using a not in. But I mean, one thing that's nice like that is it's sort of modular. So if you've written the two queries individually, then just to combine them using an except, you don't need to so you can just put the two together using except. I can explain if I need to get off.
Okay, sorry.
No,
I just trying to find the board.
Oh, I think it's there.